Part two, cruciform marriage. We're going to talk about marriage from the perspective of ministry and leadership and so forth. So first of all, we'll start out a little bit about who we are. So you want me to go first?
You go first.
I was baptized in college, University of Missouri, Columbia. I was actually in veterinary school, and I flunked out, but I got baptized, so... so it's kind of like, I mean, it my whole world was just ruined, you know, with that experience. But I had done, you know, I'd done 3 years undergraduate, so I went back, finished my work, and then got accepted to a PhD in biochemistry. But I started helping this small church, and I thought, I think I want to do ministry. And my dad was an atheist, so when I turned down the full assistantship, he just kind of cut me off. And so I worked with a small church for a year, and then a minister in another small town in Missouri just said, hey, come up, I want you to be a youth minister, and so I did. And then through that, Lori and I met, and we got married. She was, she tells everybody I was her youth minister. She was out of the youth group. She was in college. But we met, we got married, and then we ended up through time doing ministry, and then I went to Harding Grad School and did my master's and doctorate, and we ended up at Portland. And now, after 8 years in Portland at a bigger church, we planted Agape Church of Christ as a church plant. We do a lot of social justice work, and we work with, you know, just all ends of the gamut, from homelessness, trafficking, abuse, prostitution, to people, just regular marriages, healthy marriages. And I teach adjunct at George Fox Seminary. And so, you know, we've been married almost 30 years. And I'll let Lori talk more about who she is from that perspective.
I lived in the same town that my family did, grew up in the house my dad was born in, his family lived in, and I went to school, I graduated high school and went to Dallas. I was going to be in fashion merchandising, found out you had to do the sewing part of it, and I didn't like to sew, I liked the shopping and selling part. So I left and moved back to Missouri, and that's when I met Ron, and so I was about a year out of the group. He, you know, so he's kind of my youth minister. Anyway, we went out a couple times and got engaged. We talked about that yesterday. we had an official date. If my daughter came home and told me that, I would freak out. So my parents asked me who I was marrying, and I said, Ron from church. And my mom goes, we haven't even had him over for lunch yet. I said, well, so guess what? So that's kind of how we do things. We're both alike that way. We just jump in and go, how do we get in the middle of it? Which is how we've gotten into most of the ministries, I think, that we've done. Our domestic violence ministry started in the little church in Missouri, 60 members. The youngest member was 45. She was a widow at 45. Everyone was 60 plus. And I had a best friend in high school who was dating violence all through high school. And he followed her to college, financially ruined her by the time she got out of college, almost killed her a couple times. And she would call me, and I didn't know what to do. And I said, what do you want me to do? I would just cry to Ron about it. And finally one day, we knew there was a shelter in our little town that serviced five communities. And he said, you got to talk to them, because I don't know what to do with it. I mean, this is 1988, maybe, 1989. And so the shelter said, well, we'd love to do a training for your church, and we'll do it for free if you can get six women to learn how. And I thought, I'm not going to. These women are not going to want to do this. And so I said, I kind of brought it up at the Wednesday night ladies group, because we met separately, and I have 12 of them raised their hand. Let's do it. We need to do this. And I said, okay. So I was right in the midst with them. And then the men joined in. They started cleaning up and building play structures and fences for this. And so, but even though Ron and I did most of the work, the church kind of pulled us with them. And this became a community event for us. So I learned through that from my friend who has gotten out. She didn't marry the guy. She actually is the dean of a small college in Missouri now. She went on and got her PhD, married a wonderful man. So I always tell her she helped me launch that area of my life, and that was 24 years ago. So we've been working in domestic violence for 24 years in that piece. So for me, I always just thought I was the minister's wife, but that was my defining moment, is that you know, it found me. That was my ministry, and I couldn't get away from it. So.
Yeah, and then as a in a church plant, you know, we're always jumping into things, trying to figure it out later. That's not always the best way to get married, but you know, it worked for us. But we had known each other, and we were making the commitment to stay. But we've, you know, most of our ministry's been that. Like, I was on the Attorney General's Sexual Assault Task Force at Oregon, and heard a sheriff's deputy talking about trafficking in Portland, and he put his text number up there, so I texted him right there and said, "I think the church should be involved. How do we get involved?" And he grabs me afterwards and goes, "Meet me for coffee." And then, like, the next week, he's got me doing this whole list of things. And I said, "Well, isn't that dangerous?" He goes, "Well, I'll take care of that. I got a bulletproof vest. You don't worry about that." And but, you know, in homelessness or college kids dragging homeless people into church, and we're thinking, okay, we need to lead these college kids, the Cascade College kids up there in Portland. So we're, you know, most of our ministries we've jumped into have been, you know, we need to be a part of this. The issue is, you know, we always have to ask this as a couple. We have three boys. Our oldest one's married and out of college, and then we have a 13 and 11 year old. But this is a big issue because, you know, we do dangerous things, and we do things that aren't so dangerous. But we're always wrestling with how do we bring our families along. We talked yesterday about healthy marriages, and we'll kind of integrate that in as we talk today. But ministry has to have the question about how does our ministry affect our families? I mean, if you think about the kinds of ministries we do, there can be a negative effect for our families, right? I mean, nobody's ever threatened. I mean, people have threatened me, but nobody's ever threatened to kill me. Okay, and I think the worst that's happened to disfellowship me. You know, when you have people threaten you, and then somebody says, you know, we might have to disfellowship you. I'm like, you know, I'm okay. You know, but there's some dangerous elements, but there's some positive elements. Like having our kids involved with us in this ministry brings some powerful dynamics to that. And I know Lori's had a lot of times where she's had to make decisions based on that with family.
Yeah. I talked a little bit yesterday. We have pretty strong boundaries. Our boundaries during the week is family time. Our kids are getting older. They do things on their own. But our friends and family know that usually the evenings are our time. And I think that's how we're able to do what we do. We manage our time in the daytime. I have a story that I always think about is we had our first homeless teen off the street when we started Agape, and she was 5 months pregnant. Her fiance brought her to Portland. He got arrested and sent back to Cleveland, and she was all alone. Ron and our middle son met her downtown Portland and bought her some juice. And he used to take our boys before they started school every Wednesday downtown to kind of check on a lot of the people. And she showed up at church, hid in the corner, had an outfit on that had no back to it at all. She just pretty much, and one of our ladies said, "Can I take you to Target? Would you like something that's a little more comfortable?" And she didn't want it at first. And the next Sunday she showed up, offered her the same thing, and she kind of came out of the corner and she said, "That'd be okay." So we got to know her. Well, she didn't have anybody there, so Christmas or New Year's Eve, she went into labor. And we have a friendship, and I went to doctor's appointments with her, and she called me. She said, "I'm in labor." I thought, "Oh, it's New Year's Eve." And so I said, "Well, I'll take you to the hospital." It was early in the day, and they said, "Well, we can't admit her." And, you know, we were at the state-run hospital, basically. "We can't admit her. Can she go home with you?" And I said, "No, she can't." And I'm pretty sure they thought she was my daughter, and I said, they said, "Well, what are you going to do?" I said, "Well, she's not my daughter, and I've only known her 4 months." And I took the doctor aside. He was a young guy. And I said, "Look, I said, I can't. That's a boundary I can't cross with my family for her to be at my house. I have young kids." I said, "Is there anything you can do?" I said, "I will be here with her. I will come back. I'll be at her side this whole time." But I said, "That's really not a safe thing for her because she doesn't really know our family that well. And I don't want to get in her space. And it's not safe for my family." And about an hour later, she was admitted to the hospital. And I thought, you know, all I did was talk. I was just straight with them. I could have said, "Yeah, I can do it," you know, and told my family they needed to understand. But that was one of those times that God was saying, "You know what, you need to keep your boundaries up." that's probably not going to be safe for either one. So that's been really hard for us, especially with the types of ministry we do. But even going back to when some of the bigger churches we were in, keeping your boundaries, keeping knowing, you know, people can take your time all the time. People want something from you all the time. And I've found out it can wait, you know. Most of the time, 99% of the time, I think in the 30 years of ministry, you've been called once, maybe twice in the middle of the night that he had to go to. One was a little boy fell out of a window, an apartment window, and of course he went. But it's just so few. And we decided a long time ago, it's not about, you know, us being there and feeling good. It's about making sure that we're, our family knows, you know, our boundaries. So yeah, we can add on to that.
Well, and there's times when we'll talk and one of us will say, I think I should say no. And the other one will say, no, this is an important issue. But what we've learned is that it's not, and let me back up, we've listened to adult children of ministers, and they've shared stories with us, and most of the stories have been that my dad was gone all the time, okay? We have some women that we love very much, older women whose husbands were very influential ministers who'd set, you know, when I go to visit the older folks, I take the boys with me, the kids with when they were little, and I remember times some of the older ministers' wives would tell me, you know, "Thank, it's so nice that you bring your kids, but let me tell you what it's like to have a husband who's married to God first, the church second, and then his family." And we heard a lot of those stories. I was lucky to hear a lot of those stories as well from females because it caused us to say, we don't want to do that to our kids. And part of, like Lori's saying, boundaries don't mean that they're never flexible. It means that sometimes they're flexible, but generally we've set the boundaries so that the congregation knows when your day off is and they don't bother you, and unless it's, you know, an emergency, or that somebody will get, if you have other staff, that somebody will get there and make sure it's cared for. Boundaries also mean that people respect your privacy and they don't tend to come infringing on. And Lori's told stories before of sometimes when we have people in our home and if someone comes drunk, you know, I meet them at the door and say, man, you can't come. This is my family. You know, you can't come in here, you know, high or drunk, you know, and they're okay. And I will get them home. But, you know, our home is a safe place because we want our kids to be safe. But we also understand that sometimes we have to be flexible and our kids have to understand that a little bit. And I think this is the struggle that so many, I think, in ministry or leadership, I mean, elders, deacons, teachers, people who run benevolence ministries, I mean, whatever your ministry is, this is a big concern. And on the one hand, the abuse of it is you got to understand because this is the Lord's work. So the Lord's work trumps my role as a parent. You know? And I heard I was at a meeting where some evangelists who, you know, world evangelists were talking, and they were both crying. The husband and wife were crying about how hard it was for the kids and the person being gone all the time and all they missed. And they kept saying, but Jesus has called us, you know, and you know, we've left everything to follow you. Jesus will give us back, you know, in the new age, you know, or in the resurrection and so forth. And this was their statement. The thing that I was concerned about was that the rest of the family has to just accept it. And is that really what God wants for our families? Does God want our families to grow up resenting ministry or to be angry about ministry or to have us telling them, you need to get over it? You know, you're making me choose between you and God. I think that's a struggle sometimes. In my first few years of marriage, I had to listen a lot to Lori because, you know, she would say, you know, this is what's going on and you need to understand that. Yeah. So, why do we need to model healthy marriages as families, as leaders? Just your thoughts. Why do leaders, and we'll talk about the pressure that brings, but why do leaders need to model healthy marriages and families for congregations? Why do you think?
Our example shows more than our words.
Okay. I mean, our example shows more than our words. You know, and the people who know our example are our children, right, and our spouses, okay?
It seems though that like minister at a church, balance is probably the thing that they have trouble with most, because it's like It's not, you know, besides Sunday night, Wednesday night, pretty soon they have a Thursday night Bible study and you know, like a Friday night praise team practice, and you can fill up the whole week to where you compromise, you know, a time at home with your family or your spouse. And that's the thing I kind of wonder, you know, how do you have balance? You know, how much is enough and how much is too much?
Go ahead. We planted a church, so now we sit when we we don't, you know what is nice, we are a church plant and we meet on Sunday mornings and we rent a school. So we do home communities. So if you belong to a home community, you belong to one. And we're really good about our members not overkilling in 100 different things. Because you're right, you're exactly right. And how many of the members at the church probably show up to all those? 20%, you know. But it's the same people that are hurt, you know. And so they're sacrificing their families. And we've been very diligent in making sure, kind of watching and saying, you don't need to be in every home community we have. You don't, you know, serve for a while here and take a break. But we're really good about that. So that's, honestly, that's not the reason why we left where we were at. But it's been very helpful for us. Because Sundays, we have a great service. A lot of us get together after church. We check on a lot of our homeless people. And then it's a day of relaxing. It's been, and I think the people that we have that have come from other churches have appreciated the fact that they don't feel like they're, you know, they're always at church. They can be out in the community where, you know, around the people they need to be around, you know. So,
and you bring
that up, answers your question, yeah. But that's what, yeah.
Well, and you bring up a good point with balance, because the conference that the evangelists I was at were talking about, they were saying balance is a worldly word and we don't need that. So what we, because that was right before we finished the book, so what I did was we use the word shalom, peace. So, you know, if we don't like balance, we need to say our home should be a place of shalom. And then what we start asking questions, because we went from a large established church where we had two, you know, we had 6 o'clock elder meetings, two services, taught Sunday school, we had Sunday night groups, and then Wednesday night. And I was pretty, I mean, I was younger then, I was pretty exhausted. But I didn't get to sit with my family as much in church, and it really bothered me. But planning the church, we've said we want to make sure that homes are peaceful, so we don't overwork people, we don't add a lot onto people's schedule because we want them in the community. But as ministers and leaders, we need to be talking about making sure that the home is peaceful. And balance is a term that fits in there. But also, when you start seeing tension in the family because we're overworked, we have to back off and say, wait a minute, let's talk here. What's going on? You know, I think that's an important concept. Yes. Yeah, you had your hand up early.
Yeah, to answer your question that you asked a couple minutes ago, I think so many people want a healthy marriage and a healthy family, but I think there are a ton of poor examples of that. And so, you know, if we're not setting that example, who is? You know, if we're not helping to be I don't want to say a blueprint, but, you know, some sort of, you know, example or something for those families, then what's going to be that example?
Yeah, we have young men coming in with father wounds, young women coming in with father wounds. They need to see good husbands, good fathers, good wives, good spouses, good children, good parents. And, you know, one of the things that we're seeing, and this is on the marriage scale, there's a high percentage of marriages that are not happy. It's the same in the church. We deal with domestic violence, abuse, pornography, dysfunctional families. We're seeing leaders with dysfunctional families. And the take that we get is, well, everybody's not, you know, nobody's perfect. But our take is, if we don't have healthy relationships and healthy parenting, you know, and we'll talk more about what does it say about the kids when they leave home, you know. I mean, at least in the home, if that's not healthy, the people coming into our churches aren't going to get any better. Because many of them are coming from really, really dysfunctional homes.
And a good way to do that is, you know, the C word, counseling. We don't, and we have to model it. We've taken advantage of it and tell people it does. And we didn't need it. I mean, no, that sounded bad. At the time, it wasn't because there was an issue, but because through our church planning group, Kairos offers it, we're like, hey, we need to take advantage of it. We need to take, you know, and that's the funny thing too. We only think we should go when there's something wrong. We need to go when actually you can actually sit down and discuss it. And that's, I think that's still a scary part. Whenever I say counseling, and people go, oh, you know, because, and it's like, no, it's a good thing. It really is. It just is that perspective that we aren't seeing. And we just decided, you know, years ago, we were going to be intentional about being an example of marriage. I mean, and that sounds, I don't know if it sounds arrogant. I don't know what, you know, people, but and one of our couples at church, they're older and retired, and they spent a lot of their retirement, right after they retired, training at the Gottman Institute in Seattle, which he is this huge marriage stuff. And they offer and pay out of their own pocket for our young couples to go through that training. They offer at their home. They live in a nice little place in, right outside of Portland. And that they said, we need to, because they've looked around and said, they're not there. They said, we've had people in our age group that we know their marriages aren't happy. Their kids have, you know, said, you know, just like what we talked about. Yeah. The kids see it. That's who sees it. We think that our children don't see it, and they see it. And so my reason is when my oldest got married, and I thought, you know, I know he sees a lot. He's learned about, you know, all of the spectrum of domestic violence and being a healthy person. And this, and you know, he talks a lot about that now. He talks a lot about what he's learned and what was modeled for him. And that's the best reason to keep being healthy, if, you know, a marriage for me anyway. So.
Well, and his wife too.
Yes.
I mean, his. They've been dating since their freshman year in high school. They got married their junior year in college, sophomore year in college, and she's been a part of that as well. I know. Yes, you guys had your hand up.
Well, I was just going to say, I think that it's really important because people coming from the outside who they've experienced things like in the worldly realm, and like to come in and to see the same things, it just gives no validity to what you're saying, like nothing to your faith. And so they're looking at it and they're like, well, what, you know, what's any different than out here?
What do you have to offer?
Yeah, what do you have to offer that's different?
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a really good point.
One person had their hand.
I was going to say the same thing, that your patience doesn't have any weight if you don't model it. And you can't even become ever an elder or a deacon if you don't start from your household, your marriage, your family, and then the church, the three institutions got established. If you lose your kids, your ministry has no sense.
And here's the scary thing. With faith-based people, the only way you can live dysfunctionally and put up a front is to disconnect yourself from your spiritual voice, the spiritual voice, and you ignore the spirit. And so this is equally dangerous, because now you have leaders who are good at, males mostly, good at disassociating, you know, from the truth self. So this is why when we talk about, you know, all of this stuff, when these evangelists or whoever have done these things, and we say, wow, they just didn't seem like that. They have become very good actors, because they've killed the voice, the conscience, the voice of conscience that God's placed within them to say, stop. You know, the Spirit of God is there to tell us, stop. This is wrong. You know, make things right. But they've learned to disconnect that, and those individuals can be very, very dangerous. And this is why, with our domestic violence work that we do, some of our I don't want to say enemies, so what's another nicer word? The people who oppose us the most many times are faith-based leaders. And they won't admit that they have a problem. They won't admit there's a problem. They're using the Bible to oppress people, and it's a continual cycle. And because they have disconnected from the very spirit that God has placed within them.
Right.
So it is important. It doesn't mean being perfect. You know, a healthy family can just be working out your issues together. Just like in a church, you know, doesn't mean people are perfect. It means we work out our issues. We listen. I like to tell this story. So our 13-year-old, he's a foot taller since that picture. So we're in the coffee shop, you know, and I take my boys to the coffee shop to do their homework. And in one of the shops we were in, we know the owner, and he was really, really critical of his mom. And I kept
not her son.
The coffee shop owner, sorry, was very critical of his mom. And he was, I mean, it was, and we were the only ones in there, and I was listening. I was like, oh. So I went over and said, hey, you know, and I said, hey, my friend, look, you know, God's not going to bless us when we're critical of our parents, you know, and I know, I'm sorry, and he apologized, and we had a good conversation, and the mom thanked me, and then, so we were leaving, and Hunter, our middle son, goes, what was that about? And I told him, and he goes, well, you talk negatively about Grandma Clark. And I go, well, I don't do it to her face like that. And he goes, well, it's just as bad, isn't it? And I was like, well, you're right, you know. I mean, Lori's told me that, my oldest son's told me that at times when I get frustrated. But, you know, it's hard because you go along not listening, but we have to develop that point, like when I was able to say, you're right, you know, and I need to stop, and I apologize for that. And I think a healthy family, a healthy leader does that in the church too, don't they? That when we hear, we say, you're right, I need to work on that, I need to stop that behavior. So in our book, we talked about, you know, the three points, being intentional as parents and being present and setting boundaries. In the biblical text, you know, how are we intentional as a family in ministry? And, you know, I think when we first got engaged, I said, how do you feel about being a minister's wife? And Lori, okay, I said it wrong yesterday, so I thought you said, I don't want to be a missionary's wife.
Right? I said, that sounds great.
Oh.
But I don't want to go out of this circle. Yeah. And I drew a circle around Missouri. Yeah. Of course, we live in Oregon now, so that tells you anything. And yeah, so that was
Yes, yeah. And through time, we've worked together in that. I've never said, we're going to go do this and then asked her about it. We've always worked through together. We've done that with our kids. We're intentional. We are in ministry. You know, we will have to look at our kids sometimes and say, we're in ministry. This is what God has called us to do. We are at that family. And this is what we're going to do. We try to protect them. We try to do what we can to help them. But, you know, we wait for them as well. We walk with them. We don't throw them into situations that are overwhelming.
Our boys know because we have to set up every Sunday morning. Somebody does. And if we go early, that means that usually they get wrangled into doing setup and setting up stuff at church. And it's funny because I'll hear them grumbling in the backseat, oh, gotta go set up at church because Dad's got to be there early. But I laugh because they jump out of our car and run to start helping them. And I think it's okay. You can grumble. It's a safe place to grumble. But they're always helping, and the guys or the women or whoever's doing it, get them involved. So I laugh, and sometimes I would worry, oh, I don't want them to think that church planning's been this, you know, drag. But they like it once they're there. They're just like any other kid that grumbles all the way to church or, you know. So I give them a safe place to grumble because sometimes I'm like, yeah, I don't want to go early today either. But, you know, we need to, so.
Or we'll do, you know, we'll feed. Sometimes we do burritos for the homeless to take down there, and they get involved cooking, and they, you know, they'll gripe, but once they get in there and start cooking and putting them together, and they go with us to hand it out, and they're learning boundaries, they're learning to be safe, but they're learning to have compassion on people. Dignity Village was a place a lot of the Cascade students used to work, and we were doing building projects there, and our oldest son, he was 15, and I said, can you get up on there to put that roof on? No, I'm afraid of heights. Can you get up there? I was like, he just won't listen to me. And he got down, and one of the guys walked over and said, hey, kid, can you get up there and get that tent on? He goes, okay, he climbed up there. I said, why did you do that? He goes, because he asked me. I was like, but, you know, kids need a safe place to, and that's the thing about parents, you know, we give them a safe place to disagree and to be frustrated because we know when outside they're going to be respectful of people in that. And so what we do in ministry is we say, this is what we do. And we have to sometimes have conversations with our kids. This is what we do. This is what I'm called to do. I'm not forcing you into anything, but this is who we are. And like Lori said, they'll gripe, and we let them gripe. We say, yeah, it must be tough. I know sometimes it's frustrating. I know you would like a bigger youth group, you know, or I know you might like this. But this is what God has called us to do, and they learn that. And then being present, that we do ministry with them. You know, again, we don't force our kids. We've taken our kids into situations and we've thought, that was a bad idea. I remember we went in to visit a couple that both were sold into prostitution at 13, a male and a female, and then they met each other and were married. And they lived right there on off 82nd, where, you know, it's heavy prostitution. And we went to see them in their apartment. Caleb, our littlest one, was probably 3. So I was able to carry him. We walked in, and there was a pair of shoes sitting outside the door, women's shoes, so we know what was happening. But the door opened up, she came and put her shoes on, she looked at us, and she had this real, you know, just dark look in her eyes, you know, very sad. And then she walked on, and I remember, I think I looked at Lori and said, did you feel that? And she goes, I felt that. We don't want to bring our kids in here anymore. And I just remember that was one of those where we were taking them in there, and we thought, you know what, this is not always the best place. But, you know, that's part of the things that we do. When we, you know, we try to do what we can, and we try to set boundaries. Anything else?
No, I think
so. Okay. And mutual submission in marriage, we were talking about that yesterday. Both of us submit to each other. Both of us work together as a team. It's not one expecting the other to do it. We work together as a team. And we try to do ministry together. And we actually... Lori's blessed me in a lot of ways, because we wouldn't be doing the ministry we're doing, you know, if she wasn't there to teach me to be patient and to have a different view of compassion on people. Because I tend to think, you know, more logically, and so I see people differently. But she's helped me to grow and love people and be more relational with people in that.
Oh, and, and you know, working in domestic violence, it's a... mainly a women's, you know, issue. Well, it's a man's issue, but women are the ones driving the force behind it. And it's interesting because all of a sudden Ron started to be asked to speak, and I thought, well, I know this stuff, why am I not? And I found out he's a great asset, because they want men saying this is wrong, standing up against it. And so it's funny, I've been able to use Ron as a way to get into places and to work that I probably wouldn't have before. So that's actually... I was thinking about that the other day.
or like one of the ladies in prostitution, Lori and I were meeting her for breakfast, and Lori was running late, so I got there, and I was like, oh, when are you going to get here? It's just me and her, you know. And I shouldn't have been uncomfortable with a public place, you know, and really she's more at risk of me than I am from her, but, you know, statistically. But I was like, you know, where are you? And she goes, I'll be long. You need to talk with her. She needs to hear from a guy. And I kept... And every once in a while, I'd text and say, where are you? And she'd say, I'm coming. But it forced me to have this conversation with Crystal and talk with her a lot. And she told me a lot of things about men. And I said, that's not how men are. Men are capable of relationship. Men are. And we had this long conversation, and Lori showed up, and we were able to work with her. But, you know, that was an example of Lori saying, you need to have this conversation with her, because she needs to hear from men. You know, that men are more than just, you know, sex-starved creatures. They're capable of relationship. They're capable of respect. They're capable of self-control and so forth. And so, you know, ministry, when you work together like that, you help each other. And we take our time with each other and walk together in this. Okay. What are we doing? Okay. And so with marriage and family, we chose this calling. So we tell our kids that. We chose this calling. This is who we are.
I had a minister's wife meet me, a former minister's wife meet me when we moved to Oregon, and she said, where are you going? And I was going down into the basement of the church, and I said, I'm going down here. She goes, you know, you don't need to do that. You don't need to do anything they want you to do just because you're married to the minister. And I said, but I want to do that. I said, I enjoy doing this. And I said, you know, and she said, well, I didn't pick this job. And it made me so sad, because I thought, you know, it wasn't a mutual choice for both of them. And so I think that has happened in a lot of cases before. I don't think so much now. But that was my introduction sometimes into women that had been ministers' wives and in ministry. That wasn't their calling. And I understand that. But, you know, she was just, you know, kind of pulled along beside. So I think that it's important that we both talk about that.
Yeah, and you were mentioning yesterday, we want to be clear that this isn't for it's not for everybody, right? That there are situations where one person is engaged in ministry, another person is not able to be. Maybe they have to work full time. But what we encourage is that couples sit down and work together at least, and talk about it and have conversations. And when we were first married, my goal was I was going to teach Lori Hebrew. And I kept saying, I know you can learn it. I know. She goes, I don't want to learn Hebrew. And I said, just give me 2 weeks and you'll be able to translate the first two verses of Genesis. You know, I don't want to learn Hebrew. And, you know, that was a lot of unnecessary conflict that week. But the thing was, I was trying. I learned it quickly. But that was one of those issues where I was trying to get her to do the ministry that I thought was exciting. And, you know, she's got her ministry that she's really, really good at. I know sometimes when I get frustrated with people, they'll leave, and I'm like, well, I'm going to unfriend them from Facebook because they're not my friend anymore. They don't go to church. And Lori's like, you know, we need to just stay with them. And she's got people she stays with and checks on. And you know, she's been good at helping me to learn, you know, don't get so mad at people, you know, but learn to be relational, because we grew up in those kind of families. I have a broken home. She has a very family, been married a long time, and very relational. So we, you know, learning that this is a calling that we chose, but we work together. And what's really good is when we do ministry as a family. You know, not so much how productive will I be without them, but we do ministry as a family. You know, and so finding that peace. Getting our kids to participate with us. Kids want to do things differently. But finding ways, how do we get our kids involved with us? You know, And that may mean we need to slow down a little bit, but kids actually want to learn. And, you know, what are some of the things we want our kids to learn? Compassion, empathy, love, patience. We want them to be able to stand up for a stand against oppression, you know, and stand up for people who've been hurt. So these are some things that they can learn in ministry, but we let our families come alongside of us, with us. And then couple things I think we said we wanted to share. You know that passage about elders managing their household? Have you read that one? Okay. There's a Greek word for manage that was used by all the Greek philosophers, and it meant manage. Paul doesn't use that word. He uses the word involve. And in the ancient world, men hired slaves to raise their kids, or the wives raised the kids, and the husbands were out in public. And we think Paul is asking for leaders to be involved with their families. And we think, you know, what we want to do in our churches is have leaders who are involved with their families. So, you know, do I need to go to my kids' ball games? Yes, you need to go to your kids' ball games. Do I need to go to my kids' school events? Yes. Especially if you're in ministry, you're flexible to do that. Should I coach my kids? Christians should coach their kids' teams, because you have a great opportunity to reach people and encourage kids in there. But, you know, management is more involvement. What about the one about kids leaving home? You know, if people walk away from God, we don't call God a bad God. Have you noticed that? When people walk away from God, we don't say, God, it's your fault. What kind of a God are you? When people leave a church or get caught up in sin and walk away from a church, we don't look at the leaders and say, what kind of leaders are you? That person left the church. Okay. But when kids grow up and leave home and walk away from church, we blame the parents. I've never understood why. I don't think, you know, in the book we talk more about some of the biblical texts, but I think we need to let parents know that, you know, we train our kids, we teach our kids, this is a faith that's free will. When they leave home, they're going to make their own choice. But what we do want, maybe there's some things we want our children to learn, you know, that, you know, Jesus is passionate, we're passionate about Jesus, that Jesus is real in our lives, Jesus is love, God is love, the empathy and compassion and you know, courage in our communities are what's really important. And maybe those are some of the things we want our kids to learn, and we pray that they'll walk with God. But if they grow up and leave home and walk away, we don't blame parents. We don't blame ourselves. We just do what we can. And I think we need to give leaders a little more of a break sometimes in churches, because we judge them on how their children turn out rather than judging them on their families or at least looking at how they are in their families. And this is a picture of our boys under the caves. We call it a homeless camp down under the bridges. But they're having fun. Didn't tell them how dirty it is in there. But so I think, does that cover all of our material? We have a few minutes for questions. So any questions or thoughts there?
Well, I was just going to say that I really appreciate, because I grew up a pastor's kid, and I saw a lot of, with my dad being a pastor, like a lot of times, like, he gave so much of himself, and he kind of forgot to just either take care of himself, you know, kind of have the family be able to be with him. And so, you know, as he's gotten older, like, you see a kind of a lot of that just die. I don't want to say dead, but you know, like he's just kind of lost a lot of that just passion. I mean, it's like he loves God, but I just don't see it as much. And I feel like it's because he didn't take that kind of balance act of being with the family and maybe focusing on him, his spiritual health rather than everybody else's.
And I think that's huge. But we don't focus on that and listen to what we're telling people that would help them, and we don't take our own advice. That's
we carry a lot of emotional baggage, and we come home and the last thing we want to do is hear, you know, something that at that time seems very unimportant but is really important to a second grader. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to say, I've been listening to everybody's stuff all day, I don't want to listen. But you know, I think that's just, Lori, it's intentional.
Yeah.
You know, we have to put it down and we have to listen. Or when we've had some time to unwind, to get with them and listen to them, and so that they can feel important too, I think.
One of the things I've noticed with becoming in the ministry with David the last almost 6 years is that I had grown children that weren't preacher's kids, but they were always involved in ministry. And so what was the tweaking of that was even, I think, a deeper respect for understanding what all goes on in ministry and their having the maturity to be able to say, well, what's going on, or aware of it, but then realizing that's not something we're going to talk about.
Right.
Because we're not only protecting our family and our children, even adult children, mm-hmm. and grandchildren, all that, but it's protecting the church body,
right.
and the people involved. And so as an adult child, I think overall what I've noticed with my three is that they just gave them even a deeper respect, which I think ultimately in this type of line of work, I mean, any line of work, you want your child to know what you're
right.
doing and have respect because you have a passion. But in ministry, I think sometimes it's so much better now for people to have more respect that for mm-hmm. and feel proud of their parents
right.
instead of feeling neglected, but to feel proud.
Right.
And part of that is, I think everybody's learning to say, like you're saying, we do this as a family, we bring along, and so I think that's a really neat thing. Instead of feeling bad
right.
about it,
exactly.
feel pride as a family. You know, this is God calling us, and we're excited to see how God will call you,
right.
whatever, but you still have this peace
right.
with us, always.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we've been able to adopt that even just in a few years, going, no,
that's
we have a piece of this.
Right.
And I think that just builds kids up and builds families. And
that's what we told
grandkids.
Our oldest son when he went off to University of Oregon. Not a lot of Eugene, Oregon is not known for being the faith center of the world, trust me. And so he really could not. He tried. He looked. There's no agape here. There's no. And I'm like, try. You can find something. And he texted one night and he goes, well, I'm Methodist now. And I said, great. What does that mean? I mean, and he goes, the Methodist Student Center. He goes, they're always feeding the homeless. And he goes, it was just so comfortable and cool. And what was really neat is we ended up knowing the guy that ran that, knew him through a state agency, because Nathan happened to say who he was. And he goes, your dad, Ron Clark? And he goes, yeah. And he ended up doing our kids' marriage premarital counseling. So, and it was nice because, and Nathan started seeing, oh, even when I'm out somewhere, I'm an extension of my family. And, you know, Nathan's calling is not ministry, but it's political. And he's finding that out even in that realm. So, you know, that's a good point. As my kids know, you're still an extension of us, whether you choose to do ministry or be in, yeah, so.
And we've had some of those heart-to-heart talks with them about some of the issues we dealt with at church, whether, you know, pedophilia or whatever, and you know, we said this is what happened, and this is what happened to us, and this is why there were people upset with us, and because when they become adults, and that's one of the things that we open up and let them know, you know, that you know this is a stance that we take, and you know the price that we were paying for it is actually a price that's the right price, and this is why we did that. And I think when they hit that age, it starts connecting. They grow in respect of what we do. So. We're at overtime.
Yes, thank you very
much. You can like our Agape Facebook or send us an email if you want to know more when the book comes out. And have a good week.
Thank you so much.
Hey, good to meet you.
Fine. Yeah, thank you.
Good to see you, Dan.